And I'm rolling on here, so yes.
Okay. Yvette.
Hello. Hey everyone, it's Darian Simone Harvin, and thank you for listening to another episode of Am I Allowed to Like Anything? The podcast that talks to people about their work, their lives, and how they are maintaining their optimism in this world, to put it lightly. So a little more than 2 years ago, which honestly seems like a lifetime to me now looking back, I interviewed Yvette Newell Shore, who is Beyoncé's publicist, but also formerly represented Destiny's Child, Prince, Mariah Carey. I could go on and on. Her Rolodex is amazing. She also currently represents Chloe and Halle, formerly Adele, Tony Bennett. I mean, the woman has got some clients. In full disclosure, I interned for her in college. So when I asked if I could interview her for a project I was working on, she said, of course. I never ended up publishing the project, but when I began to brainstorm for an episode for this week's Am I Allowed to Like Anything, I remembered that I had this pretty fantastic sit-down interview with Yvette, and granted 2 years ago, she still very much felt like the same Yvette to me, and I thought that she dropped a lot of gems that people should hear. And so this is it. She talks to me about the love she has for her home island in Grenada, and what moving to Brooklyn at the age of 14 was like, repping Mariah Carey in Destiny's Child, and how she got into publicity to begin with. And she also runs through the valuable lessons that she's learned in her life. And I mean, as much as you can tell, I think that I've grown as an interviewer from 2 years ago, I also think that you'll really appreciate this conversation, because Yvette is someone who kind of captivates you when she talks. And she's dope. So rate and review Am I Allowed to Like Anything on iTunes, tweet about it, Facebook it, and maybe we can get Yvette to come on and do an updated episode. Enjoy.
Tell me first about where you grew up.
So I grew up in Grenada, which is still the most beautiful place in the world to me. It's certainly where I feel the most at home, the most relaxed. I could speak the way I want to speak. I eat things that we call organic here.
I know that you've gone through your entire life, and so much of like what you've learned in Grenada and how you grew up has affected you to this day.
Yeah.
And how has that served you?
Very well. I mean, it served me in every single thing. I still hear my grandfather's voice. I still hear my grandmother's voice. I credit them with teaching me everything I know. My grandfather, you know, he was just not the typical male, you know, and the typical male in those days were, you know, believed that women should be certain things and men should be certain things. My grandfather just didn't have that in him at all. So he trusted me at 8 years old to work alongside him in his shop, and he trusted me to go and buy our wholesale items for the grocery store that we had. I mean, that was just incredibly a gift and an empowerment stand for him to give to me. I hear my grandmother saying things like, when someone comes in your midst, they should feel better leaving than when they came. And so it's my mantra. I really try to make a positive impact on people. It's all about them. It's all about them. And they were careful enough to instill a sense of fear in me. So as much as I admired them and I respected them, I was also afraid to do certain things. Why? Because I never wanted to hurt them.
Right.
So I would always say, how would mama feel about this? Oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. Even now, as a grown woman, I still go, I don't know if my family would really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now looking back at your childhood and what you learned, and now looking at where you are now.
Yeah.
Do you kind of see maybe some of the characteristics in who you were and what you grew up learning? Do you kind of see that in yourself now and what you love now and what you're interested in now?
I always say inside of me, there's an 8-year-old girl and her name is Yvette Noel. She's not married yet. There's no sure. I'm Yvette Noel. I'm 8 years old and I'm a very, very sensitive child. And I cry very easily, and I feel things very deeply. And for a long time, I felt like she was getting in the way of my progress as a professional person, because people would say things in meetings that I would be, oh, I'm the only one that's feeling like sort of ashamed about this comment. Everybody else thinks it's like great and high-fiving, or describing things in derogatory ways. I just didn't get with that, right? And then one day I decided I'm just gonna love her. I'm gonna love her because the part of my heart that makes me sensitive is the same part that makes me love deeply and care deeply. And so that girl liked mangoes. I can't live without mangoes. So there are certain tastes that still remain.
Right, and you're never gonna suppress that.
I'm never gonna suppress that. That 8-year-old girl loved to go into the garden and smell ginger. I get up in the morning, I need ginger. You know, so there are these little things that I know is a part of me, and I just find myself, if I'm home alone or something, just kind of smiling. And the one thing, though, that the grown-up Yvette does that the little Yvette didn't do, I dance. Like, I'm not a great dancer, I don't think I am, but like it's what just gets me happy. Mm-hmm. I just dance for everything. I'm always dancing. I'm in the mirror dancing, I'm in my bathroom dancing. I have a love affair with dance, and I go to my closet and I'm cleaning and I'm dancing. When I was 8, oh, dancing? 10? Never. 12? Never. You know, Michael Jackson got me dancing.
Yes.
You know, and then I dance all the time now.
Who did you grow up listening to?
The Mighty Sparrow and Bob Marley, Lord Kitchener. There was a woman in Trinidad called Calypso Rose. Those people. I mean, I grew up, it's funny. The sort of dichotomy of my listening was boom, reggae and calypso. And over here was like Catholic hymns.
No, that's true.
I mean, that's kind of what I listen to, you know. Yeah. In one breath, I'm singing like Amazing Grace and Blessed Assurance. And then the next one, I'm like, you know, the lizard ran up her leg and she disappeared. That was, you know, that was Sparrow. And, you know, so it was a good thing.
Yeah. Okay, so I love to talk about this because I think it's such a great story. So I remember you were telling me about one of like your very, first of all, remind me when you moved to Brooklyn.
I was 14.
You were 14.
I was 14.
And yeah. I mean, just like, what was that like?
Horrible.
Why so?
Because I really loved Grenada. I really had a sense of my culture and my nationality. I had a lot of pride in being Grenadian. I had a lot of pride in being a Caribbean girl. I loved it. I loved getting up and seeing the mountains. And I was what we call a show-off. I was a show-off little girl. I was really smart, and I wanted everybody to know I was smart. And I used to be the girl that they picked on the girl that they chose to bring up flowers to the prime minister when he was coming into our village, you know. So I was that girl, and I kind of liked my place where I was. I loved school, I loved my friends, and most importantly, I loved my grandparents. And we had a really beautiful house, and why would I leave it? And then my father, who had been, my mom was living in the US and then sent for my dad, and is the tradition of Caribbean people to just send for their kids one by one. In our case, it was two by two, and I was just like, oh, please. You know, and I knew my father's decision was that when we became 14, we would have to come to the U.S., because by then we would have had a proper Caribbean education, and then we can come. And I was just like, please, please, don't turn 14. Don't turn 14. And of course, when I turned 14, it was time to come to the U.S. And, you know, I mean, this is the things people don't talk about. You know, nobody tells you that snow is really cold when you're used to walking in sand.
You have to experience
it
yourself.
You just have to experience it. And the first day I came, it was a snowstorm. And I just thought, wow, this is awful. I just want to get back home. So that was the most difficult thing, adjusting to temperature, also adjusting to people not saying hello after you say good morning, and people just so busy that they don't reply. And the sensitive girl in me was like,
yeah,
you know,
like
I said hello, and you know, it took a minute to get used to that.
And when did you, or how did you come to love New York City then?
I loved, as much as I hated people not responding, I loved how busy it was. I just, you know, Grenada is very calm, you know. Mm-hmm. I loved that it was busy, that people looked like they were always on a mission. And I think I fell in love with New York when I fell in love, you know. And that was only 3 years after I got here. I fell in love when I was 17, and happy to say I'm still in love with the same man.
Exactly.
Which
it just
is
makes
lovely.
Everything
yeah,
better.
It's just, you know, he wasn't born in New York. He was born in Ford City, Pennsylvania, but he had moved to New York, and he knew a New York that I didn't know. My New York was Brooklyn, Flatbush, Church Avenue, Utica Avenue, Schenectady, Caribbean Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And his New York was the East Village and the West Village and Soho, and I just learned a different New York, and it was lovely.
Yeah. Tell me about your most important internship, whether it was in school or out of school, that kind of brought you to what you started to do after that, which was in journalism and music.
Yeah. I think that the best internship I had was at Gannett Westchester Newspapers in White Plains. And it was at the beginning of what they would put out as USA Today, you know, the first newspaper in color. Mm-hmm. And I learned a valuable lesson. I got there that Monday, the first Monday that I started, and I sat at my desk and I waited for the assignment editor to give me something to do. And I sort of waited and waited, got up, had lunch, came back. Nobody was giving me anything to do. I just kind of sat there.
Yeah.
It happened for 4 days. I just went in every day and I did nothing.
And then what changed?
Well, on that Friday, the assignment editor came over and said, you failed the test. And I said, what's the test? He said, you really want to be a journalist? A journalist goes out and finds the news. You see that little thing that's making that noise over there? It's a ticker. It's the news coming in. You've got to get busy. You've got to look at it, and you've got to come to me. You've got to say, I want to cover that story.
Yeah.
I have never sat on my butt after that. I would go in and just be really, what is happening in the world? What can I do? What news can I get out there that would make a difference in someone's life?
It like lit a fire.
Oh, it was more than a fire. It was an explosion. It was an explosion, because I really thought that people would come to me, and that's not how it works in the real world. Yeah. And he taught me a very valuable lesson. What I do now in return for that is that most people who come to interview with me, I try to do this switch of the chair, where I ask them to sit in my chair and see how it feels. Because if you don't want my job, you shouldn't come to interview with me. You have to want my job. So now this is how I test people to see if
they're interesting.
Yeah.
I think I would do well with that.
Oh, and you have.
So you started working at a magazine. So you had that internship. You graduated in New York.
Yep, City College.
And from City College.
Favorite college.
You love your college.
Love my college.
And you started working at a magazine.
Mm-hmm. Black Beat magazine.
Yeah. And what did you love about that job? And did you think you were going to be doing music journalism forever?
Absolutely not. First of all, when I went to Gannett Westchester Newspapers, I wanted to be a hard news journalist. I saw Barbara Walters interview all of these presidents and prime ministers and heads of states, and I'm like, that's what I want to do. And if I don't do that, I want to be in the Peace Corps and go to these different places and help people, right? Mm-hmm. But journalism was calling me. And so, Black Beat, what? no, that's music. I don't want to do that, not for a living. But for some reason, when I got there, it wrapped itself around me. It really did. And, you know, at that point, my collection of music had grown from Bob Marley and all the Calypsonians to David Bowie and Rod Stewart and the Rolling Stones and Bobby Brown and, well, before Bobby Brown, New Edition and like all of those and Michael Jackson and Prince and all of that. So I was like, okay, maybe I can do this music thing. But I think what I loved about it was being able to interview young artists and to use my small platform to get their message directly to fans. You know, Black Beat, Ride On, Teen Beat, all of those magazines were called fanzines. So it was really for the fans. You were writing things like Bobby Brown's favorite food and, you know, Janet Jackson's favorite color and things like that. But eventually able to sit down and have really great interviews. At Black Beat, I was able to interview Seal, who I really loved when he first came out. I flew to London and interviewed Seal, and I met some really great people through Black Beat, and I learned how to put a magazine together. I mean, these days it's just antiquated what we did because everything is digital now, but we literally got our stories typeset, put it on a board, cut it out, put the captions, and then sent it to the printer. And all these boards were going to the printer. Coming back, I would get the proof. It was in blue. I would make my final changes. Yeah. So I wrote every caption. It was amazing. I learned how to do all of that. It was incredible.
We were talking about how you love magazines, you love the process, you love exactly what you were doing. And
yep. I still love print because of that.
You know?
I mean, that's how I grew up. So.
Yeah. And then you had an opportunity that I don't think you really saw coming.
No, not at all.
Tell me about that.
Well, you know, it's, wow. You just never know what's going to happen. It's all a series of connecting the dots is what I call it. I was a big Mariah Carey fan, still am, and I was also a journalist, a music journalist trying to do a review of her CD, and this was now 1993, so I think it was Music Box, if I'm not mistaken, and I hadn't received it, and I worked for a publishing company that had other music magazines, so I knew that the other editors had already received this, so I called Larry Jenkins, who was the head of media at Columbia Records. And I said, need my CD, I need to do the review. And he said, I don't think they've been sent out yet. I said, no, they have been. I just haven't received mine. And he said, okay, well, we'll get it for you. We'll get it for you. And then he called me right back. And I said, Larry.
What's up?
What's up? I need my music, you know? And he said, I've been interviewing lots of people for this position, publicists in the media department with me, and something you said with so much passion, do you want a job as a publicist? I said, no, I have a job. And he said, do you want a job that pays? And I'm like, excuse me? He said, you know, writers don't make any money, come on.
Yeah.
And I said, just get me my music. And I just kept insisting that all I wanted to do was review this album. Well, eventually he convinced me and I went up to Columbia Records and to sit with him and just chat about the possibilities. And within 15 minutes of being there, Larry said, you could be a great publicist and I want to hire you.
And who was your first client?
Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey was my first client.
And just as a publicist, how do you feel like you've grown?
Well, you know, I think I've changed for me what the duties of a publicist should be or is written to be. I understood it to be that it was a privileged position to be able to project to an audience what an artist wants. And I felt like I couldn't lose myself in that. And part of what I am is I'm a nice person and I'm a patient person, and I needed to respect the journalist. And so I learned very quickly about deadlines, because that's what I've done, and just sort of respect that. So if you want to pitch somebody, listen to their tone, listen to if they're rushed. You don't ever want to pitch a journalist that's rushed. They will never listen to your pitch. So I decided I'm just going to be me. Yeah. I'm just going to be me. I will do my homework. If I want you to love the album, I need to know the album. So I would listen to the album, and I wanted to know the artist. So I always sat with the artists, I always interviewed them, and that sort of developed into like a media training kind of. I just sort of changed it so it could work for me, because I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. I want to know everything. And so the first thing I did with Mariah at the time was that there was a little bit of controversy with Mariah back then, in that I think she had done an interview where she explained her ethnic background, and she talked about being biracial, and I believe it's the first time people had really heard a superstar kind of break down their ethnicity, and some people liked it and some people hated it. And so our particular community sort of was like, what's up, you know? And so I thought, okay, we need to just make sure that our press outlets loved Mariah for the voice that she is, and that she's saying, I am this and I'm that, and I want to claim all of who I am, not just part of who I am. And so we started with Ebony, and we went to Ebony, and she did the cover of Ebony, and we did a number of amazing things with Mariah, but I knew what my duty was that day, was to just really make sure that people were not going to sacrifice her for just claiming who she is.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've had obviously so many amazing moments and times as a publicist. Could you maybe talk about whether it was with Destiny's Child or with Beyonce, either one, like what some of those have been and why, or maybe like what categorizes an amazing moment or such a rewarding moment for you?
I mean, there's so many, wow. I get teary-eyed when I think about my journey with Destiny's Child and with every single member of Destiny's Child, particularly the last three, Beyonce, Michelle, and Kelly. I think that when I came into Destiny's Child's circle, they were so young, and I had just come from Black Week magazine, where I worked with so many teen acts, so it was just a sort of natural thing for Larry Jenkins to say, you can work with Destiny's Child. And I just saw the dynamics of the group. They were friends. The Knowles family were very involved, and just I just believe that every single person that was around them, if the Knowles weren't there, they trusted you to be there. So you need to be a good person, because you were going to be making an impression on very young girls. I was very, very aware of that. I was very aware of how different those girls were, that they all had a very distinct personality. And I wanted to sort of figure out how to do with Destiny's Child what the world has done with the Jacksons, the Beatles, New Edition, in that they love the group, but they also love the individual members, and everybody loved different things about different ones. So it was very important to me that I learned about them. Yeah. So I think the highlight for me, even though they've done so many things, whatever performances they've done, shoots, charitable things, the highlight for me still remains that first weekend that I met them and I went to Houston, Texas to get to know them. And it's because they were so secure in who they were. They probably will tell it very differently. They probably will say, oh, we didn't know what we want. I don't know. But I know that I was so impressed that they were so young. I believe they were between 14 and 15. I met them in the spring. So Kelly had already had a birthday, and Beyonce's birthday was going to be in the fall. So I think Kelly was probably 15 and Beyonce was probably 14. And there was Latavia and Latoya at the time. And they were just incredible. They knew what they wanted. They practiced every day. It still is the thing I go back to when I meet a new artist. Like, if you're not willing to put in the work, like Destiny's Child, I compare every single artist I meet to Destiny's Child to this day.
Because of their work ethic.
Because of their work ethic and because of their heart. They had such heart. They really cared for people. Cared for people on a one-on-one basis, but cared about their audience, cared about really giving them a great performance.
Yeah.
I loved the fact that they would perform and we would all say, "Wow, that was really great." And they would be like, "That was, you know, that was okay. We could have done better." They you know, they knew that, or that they got row 1 to 10 happy, but row 12 didn't quite get it yet. So they had to learn to perform for everyone, not just the front row.
Yeah.
I think that still remains, like, you know, early red carpets with them, where they would sing for everybody on the red carpet. It was the cutest thing.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I had no idea that
happened.
God,
it was, people were saying, sing, and they would sing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and then I thought about it one day, I was like, they get paid to sing. Why are they singing for free on the red carpet?
This is what they're going to be doing for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, that's right. No, they were great, and they still are. Yeah.
So now, day to day, like, what does your day look like now? I'm sure it varies.
It varies. I mean, it varies. Before I go to work and before I declare to the world that I'm a publicist, I am first a person. I am a wife. I'm a mom. I'm a grandma. And so all of those things need to be all right before I can get into the office and do what I need to do for my artists.
And why is that?
Well, because I have to balance. I have to know that I am firmly standing on the ground. I have to know that my health is where it needs to be. I am a proponent of healthy living, clean living, of healthy eating, of exercising. And I do all those things religiously. I've gotten back more into my exercising, but I really make this a big deal. You know, get up in the morning with my green juice and all of that, and to be centered, and to love on my family and love on my husband, and all of those things are there at the end of the day. When the artist goes home, or the artist goes to another country, or whatever it is, I go home to the people who love me unconditionally. So I have to make sure that they are really good first.
Yeah.
And then I really have to make sure I'm good. Because if I'm good, I can take care of a whole lot. I have a well of love. But first, the well has to be cemented properly.
Yeah, within yourself.
Within myself. Yeah.
And I also think that, well, I know that that well has to be cemented in a way that if you come into controversy or things that don't fit who you are, you have to know how to deal with them.
Yeah.
And how do you do that?
Well, there's several ways. I mean, sometimes I can talk things away. I can show people how foolish it is. Sometimes it's better not to say anything. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'm just, this is really not even worth addressing.
Yeah.
But the best way to deal with controversy is to tell the truth. It's my model. Just tell the truth, because the truth will always be better than anything they can make up.
Right.
So just tell the truth.
Okay, so we could take this conversation in so many different directions, but I think because I really want to direct this towards young people and people my age and people who are really trying to look for themselves, what is just your general life advice for young people growing up today?
Mm-hmm. It's the same for old people. Be kind to other people. We're all in this world together. We breathe the same air. For the most part, we drink the same water, and we eat. We make different choices on food, but the food supply, we're all sort of entitled to the same food supply. We have to be kind to others. People generally, I used to think that people are generally good, but I'm beginning to think very differently now when I see so much bad in the world. And I think it takes those young people, who I'm very proud of, for standing up and marching all over the world for injustices. I think young people need to know that they have power. They need to know that they have the ability to change the marketplace, that manufacturers do things for them everybody wants to design for that age group. Mm-hmm. You know, that 18 to 34, that 18 to 34 is the most important age group. Yeah. Know that when you're in that age group, the power you have. Speak out. Say you don't like things. On a total mother level, read. We have become a nation, a world of, you know, the little bit of characters and, you know, the truth is, do you really want to only engage in one place where you could just sort of minimize who you are? Mm-hmm. Maybe engage in a few more, right? But certainly find a place where you could be more lengthy about you and be, don't hide behind social media and say bad things about people. It hopefully you will feel that that pain really comes back to visit you. Mm-hmm. And take challenges, you know? I've ran into kids in Brooklyn that don't even get on the train to go into Manhattan. You know, your world is right outside your door. Learn something other than what is expected of you. Challenge yourself. I always say to my children, if you go to school and the teacher or the professor says, we're going to be studying chapter 2 tomorrow, read chapter 3 as well. Don't be afraid to move ahead. Don't be afraid to be the girl or the boy that puts your hand up in the class. Those who are quiet don't get noticed. Mm-hmm. It's all right sometimes to be quiet, but you've got to make your presence known. You have to make your energy felt. And young people need to know that they are part of the universe, and it's not old people against them. It's really not. And you don't have a license to certainly disrespect someone because they have more knowledge than you. You're supposed to learn from them, not decide they're too old for you to learn from. A great company is one that hires older, middle, and younger, yes, so that you have a balance of knowledge constantly working.
Yeah. Okay, this is my last question.
Okay.
Tell me what has made you successful, and this is like by your own definition of success. Like, what is it about you and your self-awareness that you can say, this is why I'm here and I'm doing what I'm doing and I have all this happiness and love and joy?
I have to answer that two ways.
Okay.
So I feel like I am a very successful publicist because I've had really amazing artists, and I've had artists that I've started with from day one. So they weren't superstars when I met them. And I really feel that what I brought to the table was to get the message out on them in a very profound way, in a knowledgeable way, and to encourage people without hitting them over the head, and to really show that this is what you're sort of missing. This is beyond music. This is also a person that you could really learn from, right? So I feel like I've done that really well for a number of artists. I feel like I challenge myself to go other places. Like, this artist doesn't have to just live in one place, that we can go globally, we can do this. And I'm confident that I've taken enough chances and opened some doors where they would have been closed, and that I will pound a door until it opens. So I feel good about that, and I have a way of operating that is not put off in any way. And the best thing I could say is that I feel that people generally want to take my calls. I'm not the girl that goes, ooh, you know, because I'm a pretty good conversationalist. I'm learning to be a better listener. And I respect people. So in my work, I feel like I've done really well. I'm willing to learn more. This whole digital space is something that is really incredible for me, and really learning at my age, which is amazing. Now, I have a long way to go, even though I feel like I'm successful as a publicist. In my personal life, I feel like I've hit the jackpot. I feel like I've won the lottery 20 times over in my personal life. And it all started when I met this man who, you know, I was 17 years old. Well, I think it started a little before that with the family that I've had, you know, in Grenada, my mom, my dad, my grandfather, all of that. But I've managed somehow to make a connection with all my cousins, my sisters, my brothers, my aunts, and my uncles, and put them into my life. And they have become so important to me. that they feed whatever energy it is that I have that I could take to my workplace. So as much as I love that I do well in my work, the most important success I've had has been in my personal life. My marriage, the relationship I have with my children, I'm working to even make that even better, but I think I am, especially my girls, you know, my son is married now, he has his own life, it's incredible, but to say as a grown woman that I have lived to see my baby girls grow to be women and that I've had an impact on them to the point where my oldest daughter could write her last paper in college that talks about the relationship she has with me, mm-hmm. makes me kind of, you know.
Done your job.
That I've done my job. And I think I've also been successful in the young women and men that I've managed to mentor. Absolutely. And that makes me, that's the lotto. That's the lotto. It's not about money. I've made some. I've lost some. It comes and it goes. People, even when they leave you physically, they're with you. And that is the best impression there could ever be. That when they leave you physically, as in gone, or just leave the room, that there is a lasting impression. Yeah. And that's what I hope of all the successes. That's the one that's most important to me.
And that's what you want other people to feel from you too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was so great. We could have talked forever, I know. But I think we covered a lot.
Oh, that was really good.